the Two Buffalo Studios in Bradenton, Florida. Welcome to Indigenous in the News. I'm your host, Larry Kay from the Ho-Chunk Nation, along with Gary Wilcox from the Powhatan Nation. Today, get ready for part two with James Parker Shield, founder and CEO of the National Native American Hall of Fame, a proud Little Shell Chippewa. Shield has dedicated his life to honoring Indigenous excellence, transforming a vision into a national institution, celebrating Native leaders, artists, and trailblazers. From journalism to public service to building the Hall of Fame, he continues to uplift stories and inspire Native communities across the country. Indigenous in the News starts now. I'm Larry Kay, and joining us from the Miami studios is Gary Wilcox. Gary, how is Miami treating you today?
Oh, it's hot. It's hot, hot, hot.
Hot, hot, hot. I hear ya.
Today is part two of our show, ladies and gentlemen. We welcome back James Parker Shield, founder of the National Native American Hall of Fame, a proud Little Shell Chippewa. He has dedicated his life in honoring the Indigenous heroes and ensuring their legacies, inspiring their future and generations. We are excited to have him back on today's show. Welcome back to the show, James. How are you doing today?
Yeah.
Very good. I look forward to getting through the gauntlet of Larry Kay's questions.
All right. Welcome. Welcome back.
If I survive those questions, that'll be my reward. I'll get the golden fry bread award.
There you go. With little extra grease.
Well, drum roll with a heartbeat. Here goes your first question, James.
All right.
Why was it important for you to focus on contemporary Native achievements from the Civil War era to the present day?
Well, I just felt that contemporary Indians needed to have more notice, because sadly enough, when schools or television programs in general, whenever they cover anything on Native Americans, they automatically revert to the old days, the buffalo days, the teepee days, or Indian war days.
Right.
And we're living in a modern world now, and we have young people that need to learn about more contemporary Indians and their great achievements. And the reason why I chose the Civil War as a starting point was because that's kind of a unique point in history for Native Americans, because you had Native Americans fighting on both sides of the Civil War. But more importantly, most people don't realize that an Indian wrote the surrender agreement that ended the Civil War.
I didn't know that. Interesting.
A Seneca Indian by the name of Ely Parker, who was a lawyer, but was not allowed to practice law because you had to be a citizen of the country in order to practice law. And so he couldn't hang out a shingle. So he went back and got an engineering degree, ended up in the Army Corps of Engineers, building bridges until the Civil War broke out. And then he ended up on General Grant's staff and rose to the rank of Brigadier General himself. And when General Lee and Grant and Lee met at Appomattox Courthouse, they had a contingent of officers with them. And Ely Parker was there, and he was the most educated guy in the room. And so,
go figure.
Nobody surprised. They asked him, to draft up the terms of surrender, which he did on the spot. And General Lee is reputed to have remarked when he looked at Ely, he said, "Well, I'm glad to see there's one real American in this room."
Wow.
And kind of a nod of recognition to Native Americans being the first Americans.
Right. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Man, he was the most intelligent one in the room, huh?
Yeah. By far.
Yeah. James, how do you balance recognizing ironic figures like Jim Thorpe and Joy Harjo with lifting up lesser known but equally impacted leaders? I know Joy's been on my radio show, so I really like her music.
Yeah. And she, with that saxophone of hers.
Yeah. And she's done a lot, too, for the community as well.
Yeah.
So how do you balance recognizing these figures?
Well, it feels good to recognize people and then watch, you know, how pleased, you know, their tribes and their families are.
Yeah.
You know, there, a lot of them are almost nearly forgotten, and we can't allow that to happen. So that's the main purpose of the Hall of Fame is keep their names and their achievements in people's minds.
Mm-hmm. So, James, how do you think that the Native youth can learn from the lives of these inductees into the Hall of Fame?
Well, I think, you know, quite simply, you know, you have to be able to walk a mile in my shoes, right? Mm-hmm. And in this case, it's, you know, walk a mile in my moccasins. And, you know, all Indians automatically have that shared history, that the shared experiences of, you know, that we as Indians are familiar with. Doesn't matter what tribe you are, it seems like, you know, a lot of people grew up poor. They faced discrimination. They were not always the best educated. And, you know, but they always maintained their sense of humor as well. Mm-hmm. You know, so, you know, we understand that, just like blacks understand, you know, their particular, you know, circumstances and their challenges and what they had to do to overcome. You know, Indians, we have our own. Yeah. And that's what binds us together.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's important for young people to know that these are people that automatically you can make a connection with. A lot of them have had to deal with the issues that you're dealing with as a young person right now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you're not alone in this world. And I always say, don't use the color of your skin as an excuse to fail. Use it as a reason to succeed, you know, to achieve. And these are people that have done that. You know, they don't let anything stop them. And some of them have fallen down more than once. You know, you've had people that, you know, even like our astronaut, you know, mm-hmm. at one point he quit school, you know.
Yeah. I was just reading about Polly Parker.
Yeah.
From the Seminole. And man, what an incredible story. Talk about resilience and not giving up. Yeah. That totally comes right into that. Yeah.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think the majority of our people in the Hall of Fame have fallen down at least once in their life, mm-hmm. probably more, and mm-hmm. have gotten back up, you know, and continued on to become very successful.
Yes.
And so that's important. You know, inspiration is important to young people.
Yes, and I like what you're doing, because growing up, you know, you mentioned we didn't have mentors, and here you are. You're bringing a list of them for us all to learn and make our own self-achievements, you know, and it's great to see, because we need that in Indian country for sure. A lot of my listeners don't know, but my great-great-grandmother was the first Native American doctor, Susan LaFleche, and so I like to hear that, you know, and just follow her lead in my life.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of our people believe that your ancestors are always watching you.
Yes, mm. I hope so.
don't shame them out.
No. The Hall of Fame developed an inspirational leadership curriculum. How is it being used in schools, and what impact do you hope it has?
Well, I think for one thing, it's at least, you know, bringing visibility, you know, in the classrooms.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you know, there was a study that was done by, you know, Crystal Echohawk and her organization, where it showed that 80% of the schools in this country don't teach anything about Native Americans. The other percentage that do, it's basically very minimal. And a lot of times it's, you know, just stereotypical, you know, so we try to offer, you know, a more up-to-date, you know, curriculum that can be used in schools where all students, Native and non-Native, will learn about these inspirational individuals And of course, since we induct people in 15 different categories, it's like just pick your favorite area, you know, or what you're dreaming of becoming, and you'll find an Indian role model now.
Yes, I love it.
So, James, how do you see the Hall of Fame contributing to preserving and teaching Native history for the next generations to come?
Well, first of all, you have to survive.
Yes.
And that's, you know, and that on that's the administrative side of it.
Wow.
Where I'm trying to make sure that we're not dependent on grants, because grant funding, as you know, is number one, hard to get, and number two, it comes and goes. It can dry up. And so administratively, I've moved us in the direction of where we're going to be self-supporting for the most part in the long run, if everything works out right. I mean, we're starting to publish a number of tribal magazines.
Nice.
For other tribes, and that'll bring in revenue for us. And I've also initiated an endowment program where a corporation or an individual can endow any one of our 15 categories. So we have FanDuel Gaming and Aristocrat Gaming have both endowed a category, and you can do that for $50,000 a year and commit for 5 years at a time. So that's going to help us. You know, and so we're hoping that we'll get corporations and individuals or foundations that will want to endow a particular category.
Nice, nice.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Hall of Fame holds induction ceremonies that brings together leaders and communities. Can you describe what those events feel like and the significance they carry?
Well, it's pretty typical of any, I think, Hall of Fame induction ceremony. You can watch the NFL or...
Right.
Or you know, any one of those kinds of programs, and they're all the same as far as the format. You show intro videos of the person that helps people understand why they're being inducted, you know, what all they accomplished, and people applaud wildly and madly, and then that person gets up there and makes a great speech, usually.
Yeah.
And maybe a few tears are shed, and you have a banquet, and so get to eat good food. And we always have a, you know, open bar at the beginning so people can socialize with one another before they sit down and eat at the banquet.
Sure.
And then the night before our induction ceremony, we have a VIP reception here at the Hall of Fame for our inductees,
nice,
our big sponsors, and our VIP guests.
Wow. When was the first year?
Well, we formed the organization in 2016. We held our first induction ceremony in 2018.
Okay.
In Phoenix, Arizona, at the old Phoenix Indian School, because I wanted to pay honor to those Indians that have gone through the boarding school experience. Mm-hmm. So that was our way of, you know, paying homage, you know, to that.
Sure.
And it was small, but, you know, we got started. And since that time, we've held all of our induction ceremonies here in Oklahoma.
Nice, nice. Now, where do you hold them? In a big...
Still in Oklahoma City, yeah. And we usually held them for the past number of years at the First Americans Museum in Oklahoma City. And next door to that, the brand new Ocana Resort and Water Park that was built by the Chickasaw Nation,
right,
is where we're holding it at this year. So you can come... celebrate the induction of one of your relatives into the Hall of Fame and immediately go out and get on the beach, you know, or in a cabana, or go down a water slide.
Sure, sure. How cool is that?
Lovely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, you were talking about your partnership with the museum. Have you built more partnerships, and how has that expanded your reach?
It's been great. A lot of it's helped by, you know, our board of directors.
Mm-hmm.
We have a good board of directors, who are committed, and they, of course, are, you know, known, well-known in their own right, and they are well-connected. That helps open doors, you know, for me. And then once you prove yourself and you're around for a number of years and people say, oh, they're, you know, these guys are legit, and Yes. They're not going to close up shop overnight or whatever. Then you just keep gaining steam. You know, you just keep going on, and it gets bigger and it gets better.
Every year, right on.
While we're talking about partnerships, can you just kind of maybe give us a little version of, or maybe a little bit of some goals or long-term goals for the hall, such as permanent facilities, monuments, or even maybe some media projects you got?
Well, you know, of course, a lot of our partnerships involves funding. You know, there are tribes and corporations that want to partner up with us, and because they believe in what we're doing, and they want us, they want to help bring more visibility to Native American achievers.
Nice.
And they want to do what they can to basically be a good partner in Indian country. So that's where some of the corporations come in. Marathon Petroleum, for example, you know, they bought like $31,000 worth of our Hall of Fame books to be distributed to schools in their service area, in the Indian communities. And so there's going to be, as a result of that, there's going to be a Hall of Fame book in every school in Alaska.
Nice. I love it.
Yeah. And so, and we've done the same thing with like San Manuel, because it's great to have partnerships with your own people. And the San Manuel, tribe in California, they gave us money that enabled us to put an editor and a team of writers together and create the Hall of Fame book that is now on sale and is being distributed around the country.
What about long-term goals for the Hall of Fame, such as permanent facilities, monuments, maybe even some media projects? What do we have?
Yeah.
What's your vision for that?
Well, those things, we do have on our list. We just, of course, completed purchasing of the property that is going to be, the home for the Hall of Fame.
Nice.
And we're doing some upgrades on that facility right now before we open it up. It's my long-term plan that we would also like to do some media, because you know as well as I do that, things like radio and television and podcasts is, I guess, the way to get more people aware of the achievements of our Hall of Famers.
Yes.
So we're going to, pursue those routes. I'd like to also, get into what I call monuments, which is doing statues or busts or commemorative plaques or even highway signs about each of our inductees.
Wow. I love it. I love it. The Hall of Fame highlights leaders from all walks of life, athletes, activists, artists, educators. How do you decide who to induct each year? And who does that?
Well, the board of directors makes the final determination about who gets selected.
Okay.
I put together a short list of about 20 names after I go through everybody that we have in our big pool of names, because we have a large number of names in what I call the big pool. And then I try to make sure we use a matrix with points. And we pay attention to things like how many people we already have in one particular category. We pay attention to gender balance, tribal balance. We try not to overload in any particular area with too many people. We keep a balance. And then I forward those 20 names along with all their information to the board. And then they meet and they come up with the final six names for each year.
Break it down. How many awardees do you have?
With the six that's going in this year, we'll have a total of 59.
Oh, wow. Nice. Beautiful. Beautiful.
Yeah. And heading the ticket this year is Deb Holland, our recent Secretary of Interior.
Mm-hmm.
Nota Begay, the PGA golfer.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We have the fastest Native American to ski downhill.
Whoa.
he's actually the fastest person in America.
Wow.
And we have a Medal of Honor winner in Dwight Birdwell. And then we have longtime national and tribal leader, you know, Ron Allen from Jamestown, Skyline. And then, of course, everybody in the Indian gaming world knows Lynn Valbuena, you know, from the San Manuel Nation.
You've spoken about wanting to bring Native stories into mainstream media. What role do you see television or film playing in that mission?
Yeah.
Well, I think, first of all, I want us to work toward creating those short, like 20-second spots like you see that run during Black History Month.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like us to provide content and work with somebody to develop some national spots like that that would feature each one of our inductees or at least a select number of them, and then move on to doing longer projects like docudramas that tell the story of each inductee with the proper historical background.
How has community feedback from Native nations and families shaped the Hall of Fame's growth and direction?
Well, you know, not surprisingly, we always get suggestions from people, or they'll ask, why don't you have this? Why don't you do that? You know, and of course, we always explain, well, time and money, you know. You know, we need more money. We need more help, you know, because, our staff is small and we're stretched pretty thin. But there's a number of other things we'd love to do. But it just takes, you know, time and more help. We had a grant that we got so that we were able to work with a curator here at the First American Museum and developing a manual for how you handle collections and archives, because in the future we want to be able to have space enough and develop the appropriate facilities and environmental controls to collect important papers, documents, items like Joy Harjo's saxophone.
Yes.
Things like that, and so. We want to be able to add things to our exhibits so that people will learn more and get a deeper appreciation for each of our inductees.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. What do you hope people, Native and non-Native alike, take away from after a visit at the Hall of Fame or learning about the inductees?
Yeah, I think it could be all summed up in one remark. I didn't know that.
Right on.
Salute. Yeah, there you go.
We've had so many people coming through, where we're at right now and looking at our displays, and I hear people, I didn't know that. You know, they didn't know that when I ate at Famous Dave's, the restaurant chain, that Famous Dave is an Indian.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Honestly.
I knew Jim Thorpe was an Olympian. I knew he played baseball, but I didn't know he was the first president or commissioner of the National Football League, and that's why the NFC Conference Championship Trophy is the Jim Thorpe Trophy. I didn't know that.
No.
You know what? I said that to Gary after talking to you in our first interview. I didn't know that.
We could have Indian trivia program.
Yeah,
I love it.
You know, the first question would be the hardest one for everybody to answer. Who invented the teepee? Everybody knows about Michelangelo, right?
Yeah.
But who was our Michelangelo? Who was that engineering genius that figured out that those powerful winds could not blow over a teepee?
Incredible. Who? Just us?
My great, 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 great grandfather. I'll just put that out
there. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Every other Indian can say that too.
Yeah.
I got the answer.
Everybody can claim that one.
So looking back on your journey from your youth to founding of the Hall of Fame, what message do you hope to leave with our future generations of Native leaders and dreamers?
Real simple. Indians are the best.
Oh.
It's real simple. There's nothing I would rather be than what I am. And that's a native.
I love it.
Because
Words from my
we are.
grandma. Grandma said, "You know who I am when I'm walking down the street."
Exactly. Yeah. You want to be the biggest Indian walking in the room.
Well,
I hear
Yeah.
you.
It does, and it don't matter whether you're a breed or a full blood, just be the biggest Indian walking in the room, you know.
When is your next event planned?
It's November 1st here in Oklahoma City
Tell us all about it.
at the Chickasaw O'Connor Resort and Hotel here in Oklahoma City, and it starts at 6 p.m. and we're gonna have a good time had by all, as
Oh.
they say. Yeah,
Keep us in the
that's what
loop.
we're gonna see. We're gonna have Indians from, from the reservations, the cities, all over the world, and various other places. That means Martians,
Right.
Is
Is it growing every year?
Yes. We keep the number in attendance right around about 250,
Okay.
but what increases is people's awareness of it
Yeah.
and the support for it. And of course, it just seems to me that every year I'm impressed by the group of people that are going into the Hall of Fame.
Right,
Oh.
right. Me and Gary are going to nominate each other.
I knew. I haven't done anything that great yet, man. I don't know, man. But I
Well,
definitely think that Larry has, man. I mean, he's got like,
well, we'll be hooking it up.
there you go. Yep.
Yeah. But James, thank you so much for sharing your story with us today. I'm humbled as always. Thank you. Learned so much today.
I
Thank
didn't
you.
know that.
I didn't know
I know that.
Oh,
Or in it?
it,
Oh,
yeah. James, thank you for your time today. I surely appreciate all the great
it?
work you're doing for our people. I do
Okay.
give you the
Thank you,
honors and salute. Stay in touch with
guys.
us and have yourself a great week and safe journeys.
Okay. Will do. All right, guys. See you.
Thank you for tuning in to Indigenous in the News and supporting us and our entrepreneurs. Indigenous in the News has been produced by me. Our engineer is Paul Salvatore. Our theme music is composed by Lenny Long. Today's show has been recorded at the Two Buffalo Studios in Bradenton, Florida. If you'd like to support our program, you can stop in and donate at our homepage at indigenousinthenews.org. You can also find all of our past shows now on Spotify and iHeartRadio. Until next time, from all of us here at Indigenous in the News, have yourself a great week and safe journeys. Indigenous in the News is a production of Indigenous in Music and Arts.